Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control your body and get the health care everyone needs has been stolen. And now politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. And that's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect your right to control your own body and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctors. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, you can help reclaim your rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future. Warning, things are about to get intense. Like when you stare into the eyes of someone that you really like for a full minute straight without blinking. Intense! Intense heat! Lasting plump! From the hot new Lifter Plump from Maybelline, New York. Formulated with chili pepper! Lifter Plump delivers a heated sensation for an instant lip plumping effect that lasts. Available in 8 sizzling shades. Honestly, my favorite is hot honey and cocoa zing. I put it on my lips and honestly, it did sizzle them. It sizzled them right to the moon. They were plump and juicy and everyone was like, Nicole, can I? And I'm like, get in line. Can you take the heat? Find your shade at Maybelline.com or a retailer near you. Amazon shoppers get 10% off Lifter Plump purchase with code 10PLUMP for a limited time. Episode of Why Won't You Date Me, a podcast where I was trying to figure out why I'm still single, but the jury's out. Nobody knows. It's upsetting. I cry a lot. My guest today is an Emmy Award-winning comedian, writer, and actor you've seen in Curb Your Enthusiasm, The Good Place, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Along with his wife, he co-hosts The Endless Honeymoon Podcast. His new memoir, Subculture Vulture, is available now. It's Moshe Kasher!
Yay!
Moshe, how did you get a wife?
Oh, now that's... Now, I could have done this podcast 10 years ago. I could have done Why Won't You Date Me? I was a perpetually single man. I was what we call in these streets a hoe.
Oh, hoeing about. Okay. All right. I like to hear that. So did you have like chuckle fuckers and shit?
Oh, chuckle fuck. What a truly terrible term. You know, when I was I went to therapy actually once upon a time, not for chuckle fuckers. Oh. They were a kind of secondary therapy for me. But
I see.
I went to therapy when I was 16 years old. The state funding on my therapy ran out. And I, at that time in my life, was in therapy. I am not kidding, Nicole, 8 times a week. 8 times a week.
You were in therapy 8 times a week?
I was 5 days a week.
But there's only 7 days in a week.
You gotta double up, Nicole. Once in a while, you gotta double up.
How do you have that much to talk about?
Well, my mom started sending me to therapy when I was 4 years old. And I was unrelentingly in therapy from 4 years old until 16, at which point it was rehab 5 days a week, individual therapy, family therapy, and group therapy. And it was, you'll be shocked to hear, not the most pleasant experience of childhood.
I could imagine.
Therapy ran out when I was 16, and I said to myself, at that point, I had just gotten sober, like 6 months earlier. I finally like got, like got my life together, and I was getting my life together, and I swore to myself, I will never go back to therapy for the rest of my life. I'm done. This has been trauma. I'm out. And then about 15 years later, I found myself perpetually single. And by the way, perpetually single is good. I mean, if you want to be perpetually mm-hmm. single. But,
yeah.
I wanted to figure out how to connect with somebody. I'd never had that experience. I'd had a lot of I've had a lot of fun on the surface, but I'd never had anything even close to intimacy. And so I had this like realization, why am I living my life based on a decision I made as a 16-year-old, recently sober, juvenile delinquent drug addict? And I went back to therapy at, I don't know, 28, 29, specifically to figure out how to find love and what it was that was blocking me from it.
Did you figure it out?
Well, it was sort of. I had this I had this realization that I was doing a lot of, somebody once described it as sleeping with people you wouldn't have lunch with. Have you ever had that experience?
Oh, absolutely. I've like fucked people to be like, will you shut up?
If I just throw down a little ass, can we stop talking?
Yeah.
Is that a possibility?
Will you stop being boring? Like, yeah, I get that.
There was a situation once. My whole deal was if you were willing, I was down. Like that was my rule.
Oh.
It was a pretty low bar. If you consented, then I would hook up with you.
Who's the wildest person you've hooked up with?
Well, there was a lot of wild. I remember I was. You want one that was they were wild or that it sent me wild? I'll give you both.
Both.
I remember when I first moved to LA, there was this girl. So by the way, when you're out here in these streets, like hoeing around, once in a while you encounter mm-hmm. someone that like out hoes you in such a way that you're uh-huh. like, I thought.
How do you live?
Yeah, you think you're like, I thought I was like really, really savage. I meet you and I'm like, oh, I bow down to you. I bow down to your level of sophistication. I met a girl who was, it was new in LA and we went back to her place and I smoked clove cigarettes at the time. And
okay.
We were smoking clove cigarettes together and hooking up and making out. And then she goes, put one out on me. And I go, what? And she's like, yeah, put it out on me. And I'm like, no, I don't. I think no. I don't think I can do that.
No, thank you. That's not for me.
I wanted to like make her desires fulfilled. So I kind of, you know, I feigned it. I kind of like, you know, would brush it against her and go like, this is a little much for me. So then we start hooking up. And we're making out, and she's really, really rough, like really rough.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going down on me, and she starts like uh-huh. she starts biting. I mean, biting.
No.
And I go, no, ow, that hurts. And she's like, and it's like biting. It's not like arr, it's like a feral.
Not nibbling. She's hungry.
No, this is a hyena who has a fresh kill. And then all of a sudden she's doing that. I keep telling her to stop. And then she goes, what is that? You know that tone when like someone's in your genital area and they say, what is that? And it's like, oh no.
Yes.
I have a that.
Uh-huh. Oh no. I have something weird.
There's something weird. And I go, what is what? What is what? And she goes, there's something weird down here. And I look and there is a like contusion, like a big purple bruised bulge. And I go, that
uh-huh.
is you. You did that. Like, that's not me. I didn't have that when I arrived. You like gnawed your way into, you injured me.
Oh.
You injured my poor little scrotum.
Oh no.
So that was the hookup. And then the next day she texted me like, hey, we should hang out again. And I go, yeah, I would be down. I think you're really cool, but I think maybe you play a little too rough for me. And it was a little too much for me physically. And she she responded, okay, no problem. Nice meeting you. I just thought, I respected it so much. Like, there was no part of her that was like, I could dial it back. She's like, no, that's, I'm at 10.
She's like, this is what I do. You will not soften me. I will bite your dick off. You'll like it or you don't. And if you don't, I'll find someone who does. She's incredible, and I wonder what she's doing now.
I do wonder what she's doing as well. I've thought about her often, and I couldn't imagine it's she's doing wonderfully. But maybe. Maybe she's full.
Maybe she's
finally
settled
full.
Down, and she, yeah, maybe she's like, I'm satiated. Can't be eating dicks anymore.
She's in church right now. I used to eat dicks, and I don't mean that
and
as
everyone's
a euphemism.
Like, whoa. And what's a story where you went off the rails after?
Well, okay. This is a story actually that's in the new book. And I got to this, like, I had a lot of fun. And part of my whole thing was that, like, you know, I was, when I got sober, I was this like little kid that had no sexual experience. I'd had sex one time, mm-hmm. and it was just like, and like the women that I met, this was kind of cool. And I'm getting to the part where I'm a disgusting pig. But what was cool about being sober at 15 is I was younger than every woman in the AA and NA meetings that I would go to, mm-hmm. and none of them, and like the slightest interest. I mean, zero. No one treated me as a sexual creature in any way, right? So I had this cool experience of spending, you know, a couple of years in this like recovery setting where all of the women around me were these big sisters to me. They, you know, they treated me mm-hmm. like somebody that they were there to help, and there was no sexual desire. Maybe I desired them, but these were, you know, 18, 17, 18, 19 year old women that were like in recovery themselves and kind of teaching me about like how to live in the world, how to treat women, how to like, you know, be a different kind of person. And so then by the time I like started going to raves, which is one of the big parts of the book, and like actually hooking up with girls, I had had this kind of emotional reset. Like I was a hoe, but I had been also taught this kind of like, I don't know, reverence for women.
Respect.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a perfect guy when I was dating. I ghosted people, and I didn't call people back. And I, you know, there are things that I wish I'd done differently in my single life. But in general, I feel like those women that I met when I was young really helped me out. But by the time I was, I don't know, 28, like we said, I was in these streets hoeing, and I had that rule. If you were down, I was willing. So one night this girl, and this had been an ongoing process, and I'd been going to therapy trying to figure out why I was so promiscuous. And in so many ways, it was like just another drug, you know, like mm-hmm. it was a fun drug.
Yeah, replacing an addiction with another one.
Yeah, and I had a lot of great times, but I also did a lot of things where I was just like I said, why am I sleeping with somebody that I don't even like? So this girl texted me one night, and she was like, can I come over? And I wanted to say no, but I had my rule. So I go, oh, yeah, sure. And she comes over, and we're hooking up. And at a certain point in the hookup, she starts like really scratching at this like spot on her butt, like really. And then I look at the spot, and I'm like, oh, it's my turn to say, what's this? Uh-huh. Like, did you meet that girl from Hollywood that bites things? Like, yeah. There was this like bright red, like rash looking thing. And I go, oh no, like, oh, that's like, that's butt crabs or butt scabies. Or it's butt something.
Butt crabs!
It's butt uh-huh. something. So she leaves after we're done, and I start panicking, like freaking out. And I go, oh my God, I got butt stuff. And I run to my kitchen, and I grab a can of Lysol, and I start spraying my legs with Lysol. And it was at that moment that I finally understood the old saying, if you ever find yourself dousing your legs in sodium bentacotazole, it is time to seek help. And I, while I was spraying myself with Lysol, which is not, by the way, an STI, an anti-STI
no,
spray.
No, it definitely is not. Definitely is not. Nowhere in any book or any health class has someone been like, hey, if you think you got butt stuff, just spray yourself with some Lysol.
You thought Lysol was just for cleaning your counters? Oh, no, honey. No, you can also... Uh-uh. No, it immediately kills any infection on your legs. I look out the window. I'm spraying myself and I look out the window and the woman is there walking to her car. And I don't think she saw me, or if she did, she pretended she didn't. But like, you know, at that moment, like thinking about her looking in post hookup to the guy she just hooked up with, naked in his kitchen, spraying himself with Lysol.
Dousing himself with Lysol. I'd be like, oh no, I'm a dirty bitch. I'd be so sad.
So at that moment I go, I think I need help. Like, I think maybe I'm a sex addict. And so I look up at that point, like I said, I was in 12-step group. So I look up Sex Addicts Anonymous meetings, right? And I'm like, tomorrow I'm going to go to a Sex Addicts Anonymous meeting. So I do. I get my car. I drive over to Atwater Village where there's a Sex Addicts Anonymous meeting. And I'm sitting in my car and I have this realization of why AA has that anonymous part. Like, now it doesn't matter anymore. We all know like Eminem and like Sam Malone, like that's cool, you're in recovery. But early days of AA, like, it was social and professional suicide to be like, I'm an alcoholic. And that's how I felt sitting in that car, feeling the effects of that Lysol. I pull my hat down all like, you know, Pink Panther style, and like my collar up, and I hustle across the street and I go into this meeting. And I start listening to these men and women in this meeting, and I'm immediately like flooded with relief. Like, oh, I don't know what I've got going on psychologically, but it isn't this. Like, these people are talking
about. This is different.
Yeah, they've got, you know, they're talking about liquidating their children's savings account for sex workers and like, you know, getting home from work at 5:30, turning on the computer, loading up the porn, and then all of a sudden the sun is rising. Like, I'm like, okay.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, like they recontextualized my what it was that was going on. And I was feeling really grateful for them for, like, you know, their truth and, like, understanding myself and the kind of window into myself that they allowed me, and really feeling like, wow, these people are brave that they're dealing with such a difficult addiction. When all of a sudden, a man walks in and he sits right next to me and he raises his hand. And this is towards the end of the meeting. In this meeting, have you ever been to a 12-step meeting?
Yes. I went to an OA meeting and it was very strange because it was in LA and it was just a bunch of thin people being like, I ate today. And I was like, that's not my story.
You had the opposite.
I ate a lot today.
You had the opposite experience as me. You're like, fuck you, fakes.
Yeah.
At OA meetings in LA, instead of a coffee pot, it's just an Ozempic,
Yeah, truly. Yeah, ladle of Ozempic. Yeah,
it's like a soup ladle. Okay, I'm feeling good.
I feel good today.
Actually, OA is a perfect analogy for what happened in this meeting, because overeating and addictive food stuff, similarly to sex stuff, is a really difficult kind of addiction in that you can't actually abstain. There's no true abstention. You have to find a way to engage with the addiction, with the addictive substance that is healthy, right? And so as a result of that, they did something unusual at the Sex Addicts Anonymous meeting, which is that every person that raised their hand said their name. And, you know, my name's Moshe, I'm a sex addict, and I've been sober for blank. And, you know, they all would announce how long they had been abstaining from unhealthy sexual behavior. And this guy comes in 10 minutes before the meeting, raises his hand, and he goes, hi, I'm so-and-so, I'm a sex addict, and I've been sober for 30 minutes. And I go,
oh, no.
And I go, oh, no, because I know what's about to happen. At the end of the meeting's about to end, and the way every 12-step meeting ends is that you stand up, you take the hand of the partner of the recovery brother or sister standing next to you, and you say the serenity prayer. And I'm staring at those hands that are still moist from fingering that sex worker in the car outside the meeting, and I'm going, I'm not holding that fucking hand. I'm not. There's no way. As much as I honor these men and women, I'm not holding that fucking hand. So the minute the meeting ended, I fucking beelined for the door. I love those men and women, but not that much. I had forgotten my Lysol.
God, that's wild. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I would like to have sex in a normal way, but it's like, I simply can't. And that's me with food. Like, I have such a weird relationship with it My whole life has been weird with it. It's like, you eat too much, you're eating too little. And you're like, well, I have to fucking eat. Wait, Moshe, I have a question. So you got sober and then started going to raves. And then you're also a comedian where it's like, we do shows in clubs and shit where there's like tons of drinking around. Does that trigger you, or are you so far removed from it that you're like, whatever?
I have this weird, no, mostly the answer is just no. I don't feel triggered. I have this weird experience where I had done so little with my life before I got sober. I had been such a, just a creature of like, you know, I was 12, 13 years old. It's not like you're out there like actually partying. You're just like dropping acid and drinking 40s and smoking blunts. And that's the whole of the thing. You're not traveling and taking acid in the woods or whatever. So I had everything I've done, stand up, sex, raves, Burning Man, they all are completely decontextualized from me getting high in those spaces that I don't have. I don't have that thing that a lot of people have when they try to get sober after they've done, you know, partied in those spaces where it's so difficult.
Yeah. Okay.
Like sex. I had sex one time before I stopped drinking. Sex is a sober experience for me.
Oh, that's so interesting because, yeah, like if I think of bars and I'm like, you drink in a bar because I, you know, started drinking and like immediately started going to bars. But it's like, yeah, if that's not what you did, it doesn't resonate in your brain that way. Addiction's interesting.
It's very weird. And I talk a lot about what it is that addiction actually is because it's such a, in the book, because it's such a confusing, when you talk about food and sex in particular, it gets more confusing and abstract. It's like it's kind of like you know it when you do it, you know, like you know that it's unhealthy, but it's also the most healthy thing in the world. Sex and eating is like biological baseline imperative. Like, so what does it mean to be addicted to a thing that your body needs or wants and you must do? It's all super confusing what actually addiction is.
Yeah, it is super confusing. And it's a thing that I've been working on with my therapist because she's like, well, what goes through your mind? And I'm like, oh, I need to finish what I'm eating. And she's like, well, why? And I'm like, because what if I never get it again? She's like, well, what if you put it in the refrigerator and you get it later? And I'm like, well, then that's different. I don't want to return to it. I want to finish it now. And then my doctor was like, what goes through your brain? And I was like, lady, I don't like, I just want to finish food. I just want to eat as much as I can and then sit on my couch and then like be full. And then you get sick and then you're like, well, that was bad. And then you're like, oh, now I feel bad about it. It's a weird fucking circle. And we were talking about Ozempic and I read that like Ozempic, they're testing it with like people who have addiction issues and it like curbs that like, I must get high or I must eat things. And I'm like, that's pretty interesting. And everyone's like demonizing it. And I'm like, you know, maybe it's like a game changer for addiction.
Well, it's that kind of idea of like harm reduction. We've got this idea in the world that there's, and there is not so much with food addiction, although maybe because I don't know as much about that, but there's this problem with addiction in general, which is that it's simultaneously a psychological disorder, a physical problem, and a moral failing, right? It's like, and I think maybe food is a little less in this way, but maybe not. Like, you know, so there's all of these prejudices, like, oh, you shouldn't take Ozempic to get better, because then you haven't dealt with your moral failing, right? Or you haven't dealt with like your, and it's kind of like, well, why? What if I could just be healthy and happy in this different way and I could supersede the thing? Like what you're talking about with food and with drugs and with sex and all of that is that there's something emotional happening. There's something that, it, you know, in 12 step thing, they call it like a, this is not a great euphemism for sex, but like a God shaped hole. Have you heard that phrase before?
No.
It's very suggestive, but, and listen, if you're not a God person, you know, you can substitute the idea of like a, you know, an emotional hole where you're trying to fill it with a thing that will distract you from getting sort of like beneath the surface to figure out like what really is the thing that makes one person eat and go, I am full, everything is good, and another person eat and go, oh, I'm panicked, if I don't finish it I won't like be okay, or What is the thing that makes one person drink a beer and like have a good time, and then the other person like, you know, cheat on their wife and puke in an alley and like steal their kid's piggy bank? Like, it's this weird kind of mystery of the human.
Yeah. And I wonder if we'll ever get to the bottom of it. I feel like we won't, because there's such a stigma. Because it's like, fatty, go to the gym. And it's like, okay, well, if I go to the gym, you can't outrun a bad diet, or not a bad diet, but like overeating and overindulging or whatever. And it's like, we'll just get sober. And it's like, well, you got to get over being sick and or like whatever, if you're addicted to something. And yeah, I believe in harm reduction. I think it's like Sweden, where it's like, you can go get your shit tested, make sure it's pure. They help you. They give you clean needles. They watch you. And me personally, I'm like, I think that's okay. That's in moderation. You're not going to OD. And that's also creating jobs for people. It's such a weird thing that people are like, no, the harm reduction doesn't work. And I'm like, I don't know. It might.
I do fully agree with that. That why make people happy? Like, mm-hmm. why must a person struggle to be happy if there's a possibility that they could be happy in a way that doesn't have such a high barrier of labor that 90% of the people trying it won't do it and will just die or be depressed? This is why I think being a human being is an unnatural experience in some way. Like, you know, like we're not. You don't see animals out there like going like fucking mating and then afterwards being like, what the fuck is wrong with me? I'm such a slut. Like, they're just like, bang, bang, bang. Bring up.
No, they're just happy to be out here.
Yeah. And you don't see a hyena at a dead gazelle going like, I don't know. I'm just such a piece of shit. I ate too much gazelle. They're just like, give me the gazelle and I'll back to the steps or whatever, you know? Like, being a human is so complicated and weird, and and so this is why I don't think actually we will solve it, because of Ozempic. I think like we've evolved so quickly that our emotional responses to things aren't really normal. It's not normal to feel emotional panic over food. If you look at the animal kingdom, it's not normal to feel ashamed of sex. It's not normal to obliterate your consciousness on drugs and alcohol. But science has also evolved really quickly, and I have a feeling that an Ozempic or something like it will come solve the problem before we ever get to, like, what is it about being human that makes this so challenging?
That is so interesting that, like, humanity is like, we won't get to the bottom of things. We have lots of people studying shit. We'll just put a Band-Aid yes. on it, and it'll be fine.
We'll get to the top of things.
Yeah. Real quick, Moshe, we have to take a break. Nuuly is a subscription clothing rental service that's all about helping you have fun and get creative with your style. Shift gears in your wardrobe without a complete and expensive overhaul. Dressy stuff, trendy going out clothes, casual tops and premium jeans, sweaters, outerwear, vacation fits, you name it. For just $98 a month, you get a choice of any 6 styles each month. Access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands with inclusive sizing, fast, free shipping and returns, and professional cleaning in Nuuly's state-of-the-art laundering facility, plus the option to buy what you love. I like Nuuly a lot because sometimes I don't want to like own a sparkly thing, because I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to wear it more than once. Also, I have a ton of sparkly things. And Nuuly is very good at like having a sparkly thing that I'll wear once and then I can send it right back. Nuuly is a great value at $98 a month for any 6 styles. But right now you get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code DATEME20. Just go to Nuuly.com, Nuuly.com. That's Nuuly with 2 U's, and enter the code DATEME20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's Nuuly.com. Nuuly with 2 U's with code DATEME20. Nuuly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes. Wow! Join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak on 34th, Elemis, and more. Plus, to help bring more parks to more people, Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project transforming vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help ensure healthy, livable communities for generations to come. Donate online or in store and learn more at Macy's.com/purpose. And we're back. Okay. So, Moshe, how did you meet your wife, Natasha?
Okay, so I'd been going to therapy. I'd been doing all this work. I was still full-on slut mode. Like, I had this feeling like if I went to therapy, it would solve slut mode. And I had this idea that slut mode was keeping me from finding the partner, that they were at odds, direct odds with each other, right? Like, if I kept sleeping around, I would miss the woman that was walking by. Who I was supposed to be with or whatever, because I would be like chasing some meaningless experience. And then I remember I went to Australia, and there was this book in the condo at the comedy store in Australia called The Road Less Traveled by M. Scott Peck. Have you ever heard about that or read it? It's old.
Sure haven't.
It's old, and it's very like, 1950s, 60s pop psychology. Like, there's a lot in there that that if you read it, you'd be like, oh my God, like, you know, I guess. But it had this really profound impact on me. Like, I started to realize, it talked in there about like the difference between what they were calling like love and lust, right? And I don't think lust, I think lust is the wrong word, but it was a 50s word. I think they were, to me, what they were talking about was like that feeling of euphoria when you first start dating someone.
Like infatuation, yeah.
Infatuation, where you're... And I was so unexperienced in love that I thought infatuation was what love was. I thought the butter... I had like a butterfly-o-meter, right? And like when I would start to date a woman that I was excited about, I would like monitor the butterfly, right? And I would go, oh, I got the butterfly. I think I'm in love with her. And then if it ever dropped, I would go, oh my God, I don't love her. I have to get out of here immediately. And it would be like, I used to describe it as like an executioner switch. It would be like, I got to get the fuck out of here, like immediately, now. And I would break it off because I would be terrified of real intimacy. You know, I had these, that's why I was so good at long distance relationships, is because they keep this butterfly.
You don't have to be that intimate, yeah.
Exactly. It's just a fantasy. It's like, oh, we go to New York and have a star-crossed weekend, and then I'm back to California just doing what I do. And I read this book, and it was basically saying, like, a lot of us, when we think about love, we're thinking about lust, or as we're saying, like, infatuation. Mm-hmm. And that's as far as we get. And he goes, like, in every relationship, the infatuation dissipates. It's like the nature of relationships. And what you experience after the dissipation, that's what love is or isn't. Like, that's when you figure out if you actually love a person. And that was like a big realization for me. And he said also, like, love is always an act of courage. It's an act of doing something scary and putting yourself out there emotionally in a courageous way. And I realized I've had the opposite of courage. I've been like an incredible emotional coward. Like I said, a woman that I liked and was connecting with, the minute I had this like drug feeling go away, I would go, I'm out, and I'm going to go find another drug, right? So that was like really, and he described like real love is caring about another person's, emotional and spiritual well-being as much or more than your own. And that was like a big kind of thunderclap. And I remember after that, I contacted an ex-girlfriend that I had run away from. And I was like, I've had this realization that I was, you know, really afraid when we were together. And I never treated you the way you needed to be treated and with the courage that our relationship deserved. And I want to know if you'd like to give it another shot. And she was like, nope, not even close to interested. And I was a little confused because I thought, I've done the courage thing. Like, you know, the myth of,
yeah.
This was the first woman I ever went on a date with, actually. So I had this like, I had this fantasy narrative that like, oh, she's the one I'm supposed to be with. You know, like my first date ever was to the Addams Family with her. And I wore a bro parka, like a Mexican parka, boxer shorts with underwear underneath it. Do you remember when boxer shorts were like, okay as outerwear? I don't know if you remember.
No, I simply don't remember that. Moshe, I don't know if that's real. I think maybe you said, this is what I'm going to do.
I think I'm a little older than you. I think it's possible.
Maybe.
I think you might have missed one of the fads.
Yeah, that simply just really went above my head. I don't think I've ever seen that. I mean, I've seen people like sagging their pants, so you see like a lot of boxer, but never have I seen someone just in public in boxers.
I think I need your listeners to write in and support me, or maybe this was like maybe this was a fugue state. This was like a white people shit fugue state I was in.
Oh, maybe.
It could be. So I was wearing the boxers and like a bandana and rollerblades. I was in rollerblades. Now, I'm not going to make a claim that was ever cool.
Okay. This is funny because then you were like, do you want to date me again? I can see why she said no.
Well, it's worse. At the Addams Family, I came in the rollerblades. I felt like I was so cool looking. And I took a step on the carpeted movie theater ground. And she took a step towards me. And I fell. She tripped me. And I fell down onto the ground. And she had to lift me up. Anyway, the point is, I thought, what a romantic story. You know, 28, now I'm almost 30 years old. I had this realization about love. She's the one. And she said no. And it was like, oh my God. Okay, it's not a fairy tale. Like, it takes work. And, but doing a courageous act, that was like a big shift for me, right? Like, I did a courageous act. I put myself out there emotionally. And it didn't work. But that's okay. Like, on to the next. So then Natasha, who was kind of always my comedy dream girl, but like she was dating other people and I was out here, you know, catching butt scabies. And, but I was in this like emotional state where I was like open and ready to like take a vulnerable leap. And she was single and she invited me to a party at her house. Actually, this is crazy, Nicole. I didn't even think about this until this moment. Now your listeners won't know this, but or maybe they will. You have a purple sweatshirt on and you have Whoopi Goldberg as your Zoom name, right?
Uh-huh.
It was a joke that we riffed on when I first got on the Zoom. This is true. I went to her house. She was flirting with some intern from like a 25-year-old intern from the Pete Holmes show. And I was like, oh, maybe she's not interested. Then I went home that night and I had a dream about her. And I also, I'm not joking, had a dream about Whoopi Goldberg. And
really?
This is true. They were separate dreams. And then in the morning, I texted Natasha, hey, I had a dream about you and Whoopi Goldberg. I put Whoopi Goldberg into the Natasha dream to kind of like offset the creep factor just a little bit. You know, I was dreaming about a lot of stuff. You know, one of the seminal performers of the 1980s and 90s. And then you were there actually as well. So I combined the dreams and I said, I had a dream about you and Whoopi Goldberg last night. And Natasha wrote back, come over and let's smoke some cigarettes tonight. And I was like yippee, you know, like, and I went over to her place and we smoked some cigarettes. And and this is the funny part. Natasha was, I think, you know, somewhat recently out of a relationship and she was trying to smash. Like that was her thing. She was trying to smash. And I was trying to love. I was trying to heart smash. And so Natasha was kind of like, what's up? And I was like, I said no. I was like, no, I don't want to. This maybe for the first time or definitely for the most significant time. I was like, I don't want to hook up with you because I like, you know, you're my peer and you're my friend. And I don't want to like sexualize our relationship until I know that like I feel a like emotional and like sort of love connection with you. And she was like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? I'm just trying to like get my dick wet over here. And this dude's playing hard to get. And that's how we started dating is I was being coy and because I really was like ready for something new. And Natasha was the first woman that I ever said, let's like be monogamous. Like, let me shut down my sex life for you. She was not the first woman I ever said that I loved, but pretty close to the first. She is the first long-term monogamous relationship I've ever had. And she's also my wife and the mother of my child. So I have very, very little big relationship experience. It's really just her.
But that's nice. That I think that's so nice. Whenever people go from relationship to relationship, I'm like, aren't you tired? Don't you just want one? How are you doing this? You to get to know people again? You also work together. So, like, does that ever get exhausting?
You know what is, everything was easy in our relationship until a child came into the mix. Now, a child it makes the workload go up to such a degree that all of the things that you found annoying but acceptable about your partner, all of a sudden you don't have the bandwidth to like ignore because you're focusing on like this like little tyrant that's like shitting everywhere. And so all of the work together. No, I like working with Natasha, especially stand up, because stand up is like the lamest part of stand up when you are single and sober. There really is nothing to do on the road. You know, it's just like, you're just sitting. I remember my first New Year's after being with Natasha, I was at Grand Rapids at Dr. Grin's. You ever play that at the Bob?
I haven't, but I've heard of Dr. Grin's. Comedy clubs have bad names. I'll say it. That's a hot take. The Chuckle Hut, Dr. Grin's, what are we doing? The Funny Bone, stop it.
I found the worst named one ever when I was researching the book. It was in-
Magoobies?
No, it makes Magoobies look like Caroline's, Nicole. It was called, and I am not kidding, in Goleta, California, Pee Yo Pants. It was like a name.
I'm headlining Pee Yo Pants. That's, oh my God, that's wild. Truly a treat.
Nicole, what are you doing this weekend? Oh, I'm at Pee Yo Pants. Yeah, I got a really good door deal at PEO Pants.
I'm keeping 90% of the door at PEO Pants and a little bit of urine if you pee your pants.
The drink specials at PEO Pants, they're really something else.
God, that's funny.
I was at Dr. Grin's that first New Year's, and I remember it was 12:05. I was in bed with like some baked Lays watching Netflix at 12:05 on New Year's Eve. I go, okay, I'm in a relationship now. So being on the road with Natasha is like the funnest, because it's like, okay, this is like my favorite person, and the shows are really fun, and I get to go home with the headliner, and so does she.
Oh, look at that. That honestly must be the fucking best. I get lonely on the road because it's like, ooh, I had a good show, and you get back to the hotel room, and you're like, okay, I could call a friend and be like, I had a good show. But it's like, I don't want to call a friend. I want someone who like gives a shit about me and fucks me and loves me.
Exactly.
Wait, okay. Real quick, Moshe. We have to take a break. Spring is the best time to start a new workout routine. It's our yearly collective warm-up, and Peloton is here for everyone's yearly warm-up. This is the best time to get into a good rhythm, tap into your power, and build towards whatever you're looking for. Okay, Peloton can accommodate your schedule with a variety of class lengths to choose from. Even if you only have 5 minutes, there's a class to get your body moving, and I have to stress how important that is. 5 minutes is better than no minutes. Peloton has a range of class types fit for every goal and mood. Move at your own pace. Peloton makes the process easier with personalized recommendations and guided programs that take the guesswork out of working out, so you can just jump right in, keeping your fitness journey fresh every day, because that's what it is, a journey. And listen, Peloton has everything you need to get to where you're going. Whether you prefer to run outdoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton is something for you. Ooh, the Peloton classes I like to do are strength training. I also like the yoga because I'm always trying to get more flexible because I love doing splits because I'm slutty. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Okay, so your social battery right now, is it drained? Is it bursting with energy? Like, what's going on? And like, why is it at these levels? Maybe it's not enough boundaries. Maybe you're less social, at this time of the year. And it's easy to ignore these things and spreading ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings and stuff. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? How do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime at no additional charge. That's important because finding a therapist is a little bit like dating. You're not going to click with everybody. So if you don't think they're for you, don't give up. Just try again. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/dateme today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/dateme. Are there things that are off the table for you guys in your relationship, or is like everything okay?
In terms of what?
Like comedy, like can you make jokes about anything, or do you run shit past each other first?
Oh, Natasha in particular, I thought you were asking whether or not she could create a contusion on my nutsack, and if that was on
the
table.
Yeah, can she gnaw your dick off?
Yeah, that's on the table, but it's because love, Nicole, love requires courage and the ability to put yourself in spaces that make you a bit uncomfortable. So for Natasha,
yes.
I will allow her to gnaw my dick completely off, but for that young woman in Hollywood, I just didn't feel that emotional connection to be able to be vulnerable in that way.
I get that. Yeah. I get it.
No, Natasha is really, one of the things she said really made her fall, this is such a comedian version of falling in love, that really made her fall in love with me, is she was writing a joke and she was like, could I say that about you on stage? And I said to her, like, you can 100% say whatever you want about me on stage anytime. Like, I don't care at all. There are no limits to you making fun of me on stage. Mm-hmm. Now, she has misunderstood that to mean she can also do that at a party with our peers around. And I had to explain, like, you know, when it's on stage, it pays the bills. When it's off stage, it hurts the feelings. So it's different.
It is an interesting thing. People I've dated, I've run jokes past and they've been like, no, thank you. Or like, we haven't worked through that yet. So I'd love it if you didn't say that. And I'm like, okay. But I also don't know how to explain to non-comedians that it's like anything I'm saying on stage isn't malicious.
I know.
I'm not trying to hurt your feelings. It's just my perspective of what I found funny about a situation that's not necessarily funny. And yeah, I haven't really dated comedians. So it's like, it's hard to explain that. And it's also funny because, like, I'll do a joke or like, I'll meet somebody and they'll be like, oh, you're going to write a joke about me? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I'll like you enough to do that.
I totally understand.
I don't know if you're
going
to do, you know, something interesting enough to do that.
Right. Are you going to be funny? That's what you ask him. Guys like that, by the way. Guys love that. Especially from a really funny woman they're dating. If for you to be like a world-class comedian and then also be dating a guy and be like constantly calling out that he's not really that funny, I would say that would be a big turn on.
yeah, okay. Then why am I single? I can't believe it. Well, you know, sometimes you got to tell somebody you're not funny, so I'm not going to talk about you.
I think that people also miss, I totally agree what you're saying, like, I've never written a joke because I'm like, ooh, I want to like really fucking slam this person or this group or this. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's always, this seemed funny to me. And people also always underestimate how difficult it is to generate material. It's not like I'm like choosing between 10 hours of material and going like, well, this one I'll really get to slam my ex-lover. It's like, no, I'm just trying to put an hour together here. And these are the funny things I observed.
That is fun. Like, I'll go visit my family and then something, you know, a chuckle happens and then they'll turn to me and be like, put it in your act. Put it. Yeah. They don't say act. They're like, put it in one of your skits. And I'm like, you want me to put that in a skit? That was barely a chuckle from everybody. What do you mean?
Yeah. So our relationship for sure. I don't think all comedians that date each other, by the way, are like, no holds barred, say whatever you want. But I like it when Natasha makes fun of me on stage. I think it's funny. And I also think, I don't know, maybe I think there's something a little bit emotionally cathartic about it in a way that's like, you can bring your grievances of the way I am and our relationship onto stage in this like kind of crafted way that allows you to both talk about it and me to hear it. And also me to go, I respect the craft behind the joke, so I can both hear it to change, and I can also like say, like, I respect the joke, and it pays the bills.
I mean, one of my favorite things is when a friend roasts me. I was talking about a friend who had their colon removed, and I was like, did you hear about so-and-so? His colon. They took it. And my friend was like, what? Who took it? Why did you say it like that? And they just like laid, and then it was like five friends just like laid into me and roasted me. And I was like, that's the best. That I like, and then be able to like get it like a couple nights a week from someone who like writes great jokes. Like, it's just delightful.
There's nothing funner and more enjoyable than being made fun of in a way that is so so high level that you are simultaneously impressed, humiliated, and laughing. It's like, that's when you realize your peer group, you're just like, God, I deal with a fucking high level of intelligence in a very specific way. They're not generally intelligent. They're very targetedly intelligent.
Very simple people. And they're just like, ooh, this thing you said, ooh, I'm going to use it for the rest of my life.
I have to say, I think that part of that, where I first started to love that, was in AA. And I think that's what set me up to like love comedy and comedians and such and what we do is like the dark gallows humor of AA and the 12 steps is, it set me up to be this like dark, funny thinker in a particular way that I'm super grateful for.
Yeah, I could imagine, because you hear like the darkest of stories and then you're like, as a comedian, you kind of like can cherry pick, oh, that's kind of like you being like this man saying that he was sober from sex for 30 minutes and you immediately were like, your hands. Yes. What were you doing with your hands? Like, other people wouldn't think like that. They'd just be like, oh, no, he's got to start over again. But it's like, no, I'm not touching this motherfucker. I'm not doing that. That's so funny.
I think I love dark, twisted people. I think that really is the story of my life. It's like, this book is all about like the six universes I've lived in, which are like the deaf world, the Hasidic Jewish world, stand up, Burning Man, raves, and AA. And I love weirdos. Like, I love weirdos. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why, like, you know, when I met you, I was like, when you know that feeling when you meet a comedian and you go, oh yeah, they're like fucked up and weird in the right way. And I like them. I'm letting them in my life. Like, I like those people in my life.
All the parts of you. Okay, I know you have to go, but can I just ask real quick, what is the wildest advice that someone has asked for on your podcast? Because you give advice on it, right?
Yes. Well, the wildest advice that some... Well, I can tell you the wildest thing that happened on the podcast recently. I'm trying to think what the wildest advice is, but we also have a secrets hotline, and somebody called in the other day.
Oh, yes.
And he was, somebody called in the other day with a secret. He's like, you know, I have this dilemma. I'm with this woman, you know, I met her online and we hook up every once in a while, and she like is so hot and she worships my cock. That's what he said. He goes, she worships my cock, which I like. But the problem is she also looks exactly like my maternal grandmother. And...
Ooh.
And he goes, she sucks cock like a demon out of hell. And her hair always smells moldy. And I listened to that secret like 5 times and I go, I think this is a demon out of hell. I think that is your grandma. Yeah. It's your grandma.
Ugh, that's gross. Moshe, okay, that's nasty. That's really upsetting. And thank you for sharing. I was horny up until I heard that. Okay, I asked all my guests this, Moshe. Would you date me?
Would I date you? Yes, you know why? You're hot, you're funny, and successful, yes. And I feel like you could be you could take care of me. You know what you could do more than anything? I feel like
what?
You could fill my God-sized hole.
I could fill that God-sized hole with some pie. I like making pie. Okay, Moshe, also, before I let you go,
yes.
If you have any single friends... Because I've been trying to be like, I'll think of people that I don't hang out with all the time where our friend groups are different. If you have a single friend, tell them about me.
I will tell them to listen to this very podcast, and I will tell them that you are not a ghost. You will not bite their dick off. You won't bite their dick off.
I won't bite their dick off unless they ask nicely.
Yes. If they're willing, you're down. That's what I've heard about you.
Yes.
I will tell everybody I know that there is a remarkably funny, talented, single, beautiful lady ready, and her name is Whoopi Goldberg.
Whoopi Goldberg, baby. Thank you for doing this,
Thank
Moshe.
You. Can I tell your listeners about a couple of, only one live date, actually, that I've even got on the horizon.
Yes.
I will be at the Troubadour for the Netflix is a Joke Festival, May the 12th. And I think we might even be doing a live podcast of The Endless Honeymoon. I'm also going to Philadelphia and Sacramento at some point this summer. So come see me live. Buy my book. You're the best, listeners.
Go see Moshe. Moshe's so funny.
You're so funny. I'm going to that Madison Club where all those amazing clips that you're putting out right now, I think were shot.
Oh, yeah. Comedy on State. You're going to have the fucking best time.
I'm excited.
I had such a good time there. It's so fun.
I'm going there. This is how the nature of podcasting works. I'm going there in the past When I'm recording this, I'm going there in the future, but I will have already had the good time by the time you're listening to this. So think about
that. So hopefully you went. Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Why Won't You Date Me? With Nicole Byer is produced by me, Mars. It's executive produced by Adam Sachs, Nick Liao, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco. With talent bookings by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Maddie Ogden. Got a question, crazy dating story, or a dirty message for Nicole? Write it to whywon'tyoudatemepodcast@gmail.com for a chance to have it featured on a future show.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week with a brand new episode. Bye-bye.
This has been a Team Coco production.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.